So we're advancing towards Shavuot in this Mahalach, this journey that we've been on. And tonight is the beginning of the day of focusing on Hod Shavi Sod. Most simply, letting go into the ground. So let's talk about that a bit.
What is hope? What is like so, translated as? What can be translated as? Might be translated as?
Let's say, if that's not clear to you by the time I finish talking, then you'll ask me again. We'll start with Yisod, translating that as foundation or as ground, and then we'll see how Hod is, what Hod is, and how it can help us into Yisod. So Yisod is the foundation and invites us to get grounded and to explore what is a foundation, what is your foundation, what is grounding you, or how connected are you to a sense of groundedness, a sense of being rooted. I was recently visiting the redwood forests in California, which are beautiful. I mean, and these trees are massive. They can grow to be, you know, like hundreds of feet tall and like 40 feet wide, and they're massive. And most of the time, what we don't see is what enables them to be so massive, which is, of course, their roots. I love trees. and there's just something which strikes me about, like, just stopping for a second and thinking, considering, like, what must be here in order to enable this thing to emerge. One of my spiritual teachers, Thomas Hubel, says, as human beings, we have two essential needs. One is belonging and the other is becoming. And so the roots are that belonging, and they are what enable, what create the structure, the possibility for the becoming to emerge. I noticed some months back at a workshop that I was in this area here, like kind of my lower tummy, pelvic floor area, there was like a tightness, an up-tightness, like in a literal way. It's like a lifting up and a tightening, like a kind of protection, guarded. And it's been very interesting to notice that and to notice the way when that is present, it cuts me off or distances me from a sense of the kind of flowing connection with the ground, flowing up and flowing back down and feeling really rooted. And as I've worked with it and let it go, or kind of letting go or working towards releasing and relaxing it, there's a greater sense of, even as I talk about it, you know, sit up, and there's that sense of energy shift, like, oh, there's more power, stronger roots, more power, more grounded, more power. And it's not power over, it's not like that kind of power, competitive power, it's the power to be, the power to be me, the power to, there's a force, the force of life, with which I'm in greater contact, and that can flow more deeply into, through me, as me, into the world. The very first Mishnah in the whole Shas, in Masechet Brachot, asks, "Me'ei matai, from what time may the Shema be read in the evening?" And then the Gemara, "May from what time may the Shema be read in the evening?" And the first comment of the Gemara is to challenge the question. The Gemara says, in the typical formulation, Heichikai, which literally means, what is he standing on? The person who's asking this question. So as I learned from my teacher, Rav Daniel Kohn, the Gemara is really posing the fundamental question, what are you standing on? What is the ground of your existence? What is your foundation? That's how it opens the Talmud. Because if we're not sure about that, or if it's shaky ground, then we can't go anywhere. So what is it that is your foundation? And what kind of a standing in the world is that foundation giving rise to? How solid is your foundation? And how much does that solidity require maintenance and protection, a kind of clenching? And how much does it give rise to generosity, to connection, to a implicit, how much is it, or does it give you an implicit sense of confidence, of safety, so that it can become a platform for your being in the world?
Kind of like two, I mean, maybe it's the same thing, but maybe it's like, how strong is your foundation and how strongly are you connected to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think both of those formulations invite us into that exploration. And what I would say is, we are all invited into a foundation of ultimate strength. And the question is really, how much are we aware of that? How much are we letting that be our foundation? Most of us, our foundation is not that, right? That is the divine, that is God, that is the ground of being. Most of us, we're rooted in something less deep than that, that doesn't go all the way down. And so then we're having to protect it, because it's like, if quicksand is your foundation, you've got to do a lot of work to, you know, to stay on top of that, because it's always changing, shifting. It's not actually stable. So how do we find our way to that foundation of the world? So the Tanhuma says, as the navel is set in the center of the human body, so is the land of Israel the navel of the world, situated in the center of the world, and Jerusalem in the center of the land of Israel, and the sanctuary in the center of Jerusalem, and the holy place in the center of the sanctuary, and the ark in the center of the holy place, and the foundation stone, Evan Hashtiyah, before the holy place, because from it the world was founded. So this is the place which is the foundation of the world. So what is this place? This is the same place where Yitzchak Avinu was, the Midrash says, was actually sacrificed on the altar of the Akedah. That indeed he died, and that he experienced Tchiyat Meitim, a revival. And in the contemplative understanding, this death, rather than being an end, is actually an opening. An opening which is belied in Yitzchak's name, the anagram of which spells Ketz Chai, the living edge. So he's living on the edge of lifefulness, of vitality, rather than this kind of comfort zone of like constantly protecting something from dying, from ending. Having learned what it is to give way, to let go, he is now free to let life live through him. The life of life. So this is the move in the kind of from Avraham to Yitzchak, where Avraham is the embodiment and the archetype of bracha, of blessing, which is the fullness of life as it's present here. So then we go from the fullness of life here, which we contact, like in our own experience, the life fullness here, to the source of that life. So bracha comes from brecha, from the wellspring. From the wellspring, and tradition teaches that all of the waters were actually below the foundation stone, all of the waters which come into the world. So the move from bracha, from the fullness of life, to a connection to the transcendent source from which that life comes, is the movement from Abraham to Yitzhak, to Yitzhak who is Ketzchai, and who in that freedom is then able to live out his quality as Yitzhak, the one who laughs. Because being undefended, deeply rooted in a solidity which isn't dependent on defending something which is here, or which is me, or which is temporary way that I am, he's open to just live fully and freely, and to laugh, and to play. That play is such an important part of the spiritual path. It's
the
part.
Laugh and play.
So he's. So it's a good question. You know, certainly he is related to in that way on a contemplative level, and it's a question which I'm not picky enough to reconcile that with some of the other aspects of his life that we know or that might seem otherwise, but so I've been taught. And certainly on the level of our own experience, on the level of my experience, I can say that the more I let go, the more I can play. I've noticed, you know, even a change in the way I laugh, or the frequency with which I laugh. The more kind of deeper I go in my practice, and the more healing that comes into my life, the easier that flow is, and the openness to newness, which is such a key part of play. And play also brings that, kind of both the fruition of that, and being playful also invites that kind of energy.
Where do you get the thing that Yitzhak was sacrificing?
The Midrash says that as I'm remembering it, that when Bnei Israel came back to that place, that they found his ashes in that place.
That's one Midrash,
right? So that's not right. In the pshat of the Torah is that it doesn't happen. But this is bringing out a particular aspect.
I'm sure something in him died.
Yeah, and you know, there's and from this particular angle, what died in him is the grasping to this limited particular expression of life. But in that dying, there is actually an opening or an awakening. The same way that when you wake up from a dream, something dies, you could say, but actually you wake up to something much more expansive and broader than that very limited life, you know, so to speak, that was being lived out in that dream. Right. And that, in a certain understanding, Abraham was also able to open to that expansiveness, to see this sacrifice as actually an opening. And I think, you know, for us to really understand that is to look at our own lives and see, what are we holding on to? And we can sense that, right? The places where we're clenched, where we're defending, maybe where we already know something, but we're not really admitting it to ourselves or to our partner or to whoever it might be. It might be, this is not the right relationship for me. I know that, we both know that, we're not admitting it. Or this is not the right job for me to stay in or for me to be doing. I have clarity about that, but there's something in me which isn't fully accepting that knowing. I think there's times where we have a knowing, and there's a part of us which, maybe because it doesn't know what will be next, is clinging to that sense of familiarity, security, the illusion of safety which comes with that. And in so doing, we're actually missing out on life. That's the death to mourn. And this is where Hod really comes in. So the Midah of Hod in our tradition is embodied and represented by Aaron, Moshe's brother, Aaron HaKohen. And God describes Aaron to Moshe as Hine Yotze Likratcha. Here he is coming out towards you. So it's this going out, and it's a going out with joy, because it says about Aaron, Ra'acha v'samach. He saw you, and he was happy. So it's that going out, and going out from this place of limitation, going out even from this life, and in various kinds of ways, not mournfully and sorrowly, but with joy. Because it's not just Hine Yotze, it's Hine Yotze Likratcha. Here he's going out towards you. There's a going out, but there's also a towards. There's something to go out towards. And that is the Midah of Hod, right? Because Hod is a word that we recognize also from Lehodot, right? Modeh. Simply it means thank you. When I say thank you, if I'm really saying it with intention, I am first placing my attention on you. I've received something from you, and now I'm acknowledging you beyond me, beyond myself, beyond my self-sufficiency and dependence or whatever. Like, oh, you. Thank you. And in so doing, I'm bringing into awareness that which is beyond me. That's the Yotze Likratcha. And that's part of what's happening in the practice of brachot. It's we're being modeh, we're acknowledging what we have received. And in so doing, if we're doing it right, we are cultivating and inculcating an awareness of that which is beyond us. And as we do that more and more, so that becomes more and more present and established in our awareness. And so less and less we're isolated unto ourselves, kind of inside ourselves, and more we're in relationship with the world, with the divine. So that even the sense of self starts to shift because there is so much presencing of what else is coming in and through me. And that's ultimately, I think, what happens on the ultimate level of going out beyond ourselves towards the divine ground. It's like, oh, I can go out from this clenched, uptight place and realize that I'm being supported. Chayinu mesuim biyadecha, we say in tefillah, our lives are given or, you know, held in your hand. So, like, what is that movement? What is that energy of allowing yourself, the sense of your life being held, being supported? And what happens in your life when you let go into that rather than feeling like everything's on my shoulders, I got to do it all, I have to make it happen? It's not a passive act, that's an important distinction. It's an allowing or a letting. And that's the fear, right? There's a lot of fear for some of us who have this mentality of scarcity or whatever it might be, which is like, if I don't make this happen, nothing's going to happen. Meaning there's a lack of awareness and ignorance that there is actually movement in life. Like, I'm going down the river and it's like, if I don't keep swimming, it's like nothing's going to happen. It's like, oh wait, the river can actually carry me. Again, it's not passive. It's an allowing movement to come from a different place, right? So we all know the word and the experience of inspiration, right? When I have inspiration and I act out of inspiration, then it's like, well, I'm just kind of in service of this inspiration and giving it form, shape, movement, allowing myself to be a vehicle or a channel through which that can flow. That's when we're in the spirit, right? Inspiration. So that's what's happening here. Like, can I relax enough? Can I become sensitive enough so that I can discern that flow, that movement? and then just play. Just play. And it's quite striking the shift that happens then. Certainly an intensification of life. That's how Rav Kook describes it. It's tzigborot ha-chaim, which is wrapped up with what's happening here with Yitzchak, mechaye meitim. Yitzchak is connected to that phrase, mechaye meitim, the one who revives the dead. And I had an insight that mechaye meitim is that those who agree to die or to let go in this way, they merit the mechaye. They become enlivened. And so the liturgy in the morning calls us to say, Ma anu, ma chayenu, ma tzitkenu, ma kochenu. What are we? What is our life? What is our righteousness? What is our power? And we might hear that as the kind of despondent tone, or this kind of religious, like, you know, like self-decrying so-called humility. But real humility connects us to the humus, the ground. So ma, in that case, is read like it is in the word chokhmah, right? Chokhmah, which is composed, we're taught, of koach ma, the power of what? Of whatness, or of suchness. It's the stuff, the energy, the fullness of life. And so in that case, it flips the way we read those statements. Ma anu, instead of becoming what are we, becomes we are that. Instead of being a question, it's a statement. Ma anu. Ma is what we are. We are the whatness. We are the suchness. We are the energy of life itself flowing through us, this vortex of energy called me. And then we're free to live that out in the particular way that it flows through you and you and you and me into manifestation. Like Aaron, whose name in its anagram spells Nir'eh, the one who is seen as he truly is. There's a kind of being seen which happens when we let go of the struggle and the trying, which is maybe actually blocking it. And in that letting go, we're able to just be who we are in a much simpler way. And so on the level of our practice, it's like a micro practice. I remember many years ago, like, hearing this phrase, letting go. And I knew, like, that's something I need to do, but I have no idea how to do it. What does it mean? How do you let go? And one thing is to become aware, first of all, of the places where we're held, or we're clenched, or we're uptight. And then there's this micro training. Right, so paying attention, for instance, to the release on the exhale. There is actually, whether we like it or not, unconsciously or involuntarily, there's a natural letting go that happens every time you exhale. The diaphragm releases, the exhale happens, it stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which brings some, even if it's a small modicum of relaxation. And if we bring our awareness to that, we can kind of ride it, like surf it out. And we also become more aware of that quality. It's already here in some capacity, and then we can start to nurture it. And the more we feel into it, the more we discover its quality, the more accessible it becomes. Or the more we can just use that out-breath as an opportunity to let go, at least a little bit, and then a little bit more. And then even kind of riding it all the way out.
Taking actually interesting what you're saying. I just had this thought that that exhale is thinking of letting go and allows the inhale to happen.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
To start letting go is to let more in.
Yes. That exhale is the dying, right? There's a dying there, a release. And only through that are we able then to inhale and to let more life in, let new life in.
Inhale after that.
Exactly.
It's kind of like what comes first, the inhale or the exhale.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's a cycle. We can also, you know, we can exaggerate things to gain more clarity. So, you know, like clenching your fists and then relaxing them, or clenching your eyes and relaxing them, clenching your jaw and relaxing it, hunching your shoulders and letting them relax. So all of those are opportunities for us to become more acutely aware of the difference between being clenched and being relaxed, and to notice also how in each of those positions we have a different or corresponding inner experience. And then we can start to bring those into our lives as well. So we might be in a conversation and we can intentionally relax the body and see what is it like to be in this interaction from a more relaxed place. Letting ourselves also relax and feel grounded, you know, bring tension down to the feet. It can be quite transformative to notice that we actually have that freedom of choice rather than just being reactive to what's happening. That's all for today. Thank you. As always, the class is by donation and your generosity is appreciated.